Could you tell me about where your love of animation began in the first place and what some of your inspirations might have been?
My mother is actually an animator as well, and my dad's a filmmaker. So I've come from an immensely artistic, creative background. So I don't think there was any escaping it. But as long as I can remember, I've been drawing these little characters and, sitting my family down and going, oh, this guy's this is his name, and he's got these powers, and she can shoot lightning out of her fingertips, and she used to be married to this one, and now they're in a demon relationship, or whatever, I've been doing that forever, and I've always used stories as a way to connect to people. Somewhere along the line, I went to a games design school and decided, okay, I really want to do this, and started thinking about how I would actually get it done.
You're going to be making a presentation slash talk at the Inclusion Festival, and that is, of course, going to be all about you growing up as a neurodiverse, queer, and a non-binary person. And when it came to the animated elements, did you find it challenging to tell your story in that way, or did using animation somehow make it easier for you?
I think it kind of comes from a different angle, being that I know what my stories are, and I always have. I know that this is the story about X, Y, and Z. A lot of people who read my work will go, oh, do they have to be vampires or demons? And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do, because, well, that's my dad saying, you've got good story elements here. You can take all of them out, and then we can grab a camera and go film them. But for me, animation has always just been the only medium that I can imagine my stories in without going, well, I mean, live action could work, but the budget necessary to make superpowered human beings is it's insane. You just have so much more freedom with animation. And then, I have creative inspirations like Genndy Tartakovsky and Rebecca Sugar. Rebecca Sugar was also a massive inspiration about my gender identity. It was, they came out and said, oh, I'm non-binary and I'm using gender neutral pronouns and all of that. And it was like, maybe there's something that about them that speaks to me on a level of like, maybe I experienced that too. And then shortly after that, I came out. I don't really like that term for me, because it's, I kind of just went at a brunch one day, oh, hey, by the way, I'm non-binary, in a conversation about gender norms. And mum went, what? What do you mean? And I went, no, it's the first time I've said it out loud, and I just, it's as much as a shock to you as it is to me.
Yeah. It sounds like they've been generally supportive, even if they kind of had no idea at first, though.
Yes, they've always supported me for who I am, which put me in that environment where I could just go, yeah, I guess, I could just try this out. And like, just as well, we weren't home alone in a family thing. We were visiting some friends in Melbourne that they're old friends with, and like, those are the people that they're friends with, that I also felt comfortable around them to just go, I guess I could be non-binary. And yeah, I feel a little bit like gender terms in general still quite aren't there yet. We're on the brink of starting to discuss gender and sexuality in a way that's really helpful. And these new terms, I fully can see a future where there's a new and a different term that hasn't been invented yet that might actually fit me even better than non-binary. Gender non-conforming is a bit of a mouthful. It's
Yeah, we need to get something punchier.
yes, and as a writer and a creator who does identify as not part of the gender binary, I also think it's kind of my job to get some of those clunkier grammatical things ironed out, because I have a unique ability to go, well, I am non-binary and I'm happy with being referred to this way. So get some of the language a bit more contemporized and have fun with that. Also, if I'm writing in a fictional universe where we don't have the same social norms as we do in this one, I can do whatever I want. I can make up all sorts of rules.
And that's the beauty of it. You're creating a world, you can create all the laws and norms that you want.
Yeah. Which I have plenty of already. The universe is insanely vast, and I've been going a bit mad trying to get, this one episode of this one show that we're doing to introduce everyone to the world. And we've been working on that for like, I think, just over a decade now. And that is, it's a long process.
A big part of your story is, of course, your wonderful dog, Aya. Could you tell me how the two of you met and just what she means to you?
growing up, we had another dog called Cinders. And Cinders was, in many ways, my best friend. She was the family dog, though, so she was everybody's best friend. She was a communal creature. And then I left school because they wouldn't let me study for my HSE. And I was just, I was so infuriated by that. I just couldn't do it anymore. I went, this system is crap. The rules are crap. The rules don't make any sense. I'm in the middle of year 11 and you won't give me my schoolwork. I'm done. I'm not coming back. I can't do this anymore. So I left and tried at many different schools and got sort of more and more depressed and anxious about it. And then another of the pets that I lived with, my cousin's cat called Whiskey, she passed on and I went, okay, well, Cinders is going to go soon and I don't want to be alone with the other cat because he's rude.
Cats are going to cut.
Look, he was a poor, anxious cat who was afraid of everything and his owner made it all worse. But, yeah, mum and dad sort of went, oh, he's not doing well at the moment and he's terrified and sad of Cinders dying, so we better make sure that we get another one. And one of my mum's oldest friends lives in Scone, which is a country town. They've got lots of dogs, lots of farm dogs. And, yeah, she sort of keeps her ear to the ground about any time that there is a litter that isn't wanted. Because, you know, in the country, they just put them down and not a very humane way either. So there was a litter that was ready and mum said, oh, hey, could you get one of them for Lewis? He just wants, you know, a female farm dog that needs a home. And, yeah, we got her and she got brought down by a friend of my mum's and, you know, she's all my dog. I was depressed and had no direction. So for the first, I'd say, about 4 years of her life, it was just me and her all day, every day, making sure she has got the best training and the best attention that she could possibly get.
Yep.
And, yeah, she's, you know, she is my best friend and she's always there, about a meter away from me. She's, well, I'm, you know. They say dogs look like they're humans, but I think they end up thinking like they're humans. So I've got a very quiet, anxious dog who can't handle being separated from me, which I don't mind all that much. She's very clever. As you can see, she's got a lot of fire. Could you sit up for me? No, sit up.
Yeah. Oh.
Very well behaved. That's the only trick I can really get her to do right now. But there'll be more tricks at the, you know, I'll do a couple of tricks with her when I do the presentation.
You're a good girl, Aya.
Yes, Aya, did you hear that? You're a good girl. Everybody loves her. It's good. Everyone says that their dog is the best dog and everyone's dog is the best dog to them. But everyone says Aya's the second best dog. So I think she's doing pretty well. She's probably actually the best dog.
Tell us a little bit more about your presentation / talk at the Inclusion Festival. Without sort of spoiling too much, what can people expect if they come along?
To be totally honest, we're a struggling animation company. I was just really hoping I could, you know, plug what we're doing and get the message out there about, and that's not just, oh, I want my shows out there, because we're more than that. We're also trying to be queer and neurodivergent inclusive space in a way that a lot of these other places aren't. You know, I don't think it counts as being inclusive if you're going to go, oh, yeah, we'll get the autistic people and we'll put them in a back room and make them crunch numbers. You know, some people that works fantastically for, but it's this sort of idea that neurodivergent people are tools to be used instead of, you know, part of a network where you go, okay, well, this person's really good at numbers and this person's really good at this, and then we get them to work together and it's a community and all of that. I do seem to have ended up, the presentation is very much just my life story and the struggle of how I got where I am today and, you know, how lucky I've been as well, I think is a big theme in the story, because I don't have... you know, I don't have trust fund baby money or anything, but I've got a house and I've got a place where I can have the dog and you know, that's another thing about it, that, you know, Aya is my rock. I can't be without her. And a lot of the options are just, you know, I'll go and live in a shitty apartment somewhere and go to this school and, you know, live on meagering for the rest of your life, which is, you know, I've done that before. I can go back to being a student, but being without her and not an option.
And I can even tell just looking at her, looking at you, that she's got so much affection for you.
Oh, yes. She's very good. She also wants to be taken out. She needs to walk.